Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
Moving from newspapers to television on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. The last time we talked to Mike Mickle, he was a print journalist. Today we meet him as a TV news director. We'll ask how that happened on Scribble. What's the matter, Mike? Can't you make up your mind?
You know, I've been around, that's for sure, haven't I, in my 30 years here at the Quad Cities? I've done a little bit of everything.
Yeah, but, you were started on television, didn't you?
I did. Back in my Oklahoma days, I did. When I was still in college, my dad passed away, and I needed a full-time job, and I started in radio as a news guy there, and got picked up by a television station in Ada, Oklahoma, and that's where it all began. But here in the Quad Cities, I came here to be on KWQC, and I was there for 17 and a half years.
Uh-huh. But when we talked to you, you were doing some print work.
We still have it. For our youngest son will turn 18 later this month, so he was 8 months old when we launched QC Family Focus magazine, and his sister was 3 and his brother was 5. And 17 years later, we're still doing it. We're still publishing the magazine, but I had stepped away from television to do, you know, on a daily basis anyway, to do the magazine, and then we were also producing documentaries and got lured back in.
Yeah. Well, you've done a terrific job at Channel 4, I must say.
Well, thank you very much.
To speak very honestly, Channel 4 had really gone into the doldrums. And now you won a best award in the state of Illinois.
Illinois Broadcasters Association Station of the Year. That was a huge moment for us, and thank you for the kind words. You know, we have a tremendous team. We have a lot of young adults there that want to do the right thing and are extremely talented, and they're hardworking. And I think the dad in me kicks in every day when I walk in there, because they're roughly the age of my oldest son. So, but they're working hard, and you know, we're producing some content that the Quad Cities is embracing, and we appreciate it.
Explain a little bit more about that award, exactly what it was, what's it for.
So what we submitted was examples of our breaking news,
right,
which we have really pushed, some of our just everyday reporting, some of our promotions. We also showed, you know, when we say, so our big brand is local for you, and that directs our content. But it also means more than that. That means that we go out and we work at the Martin Luther King Center and we help with things, or we find other projects within the Quad Cities. And at least once a year, we take on one big project where the entire station gets involved. And then several other times during the year, we're still out volunteering at things. And so that was included in it as well.
Yeah, well, that was quite an honor, and I must say it's noticeable when you watch on TV that you're really covering the ground and doing a lot of local things. Which, that's the thing about news. You know, I think most of us grew up watching national news primarily. For the reason I went to WHBF TV is because they carried Edward R. Murrow and Cronkite.
Oh, right.
I had started in television at WOC-TV, then went into radio. When I came back, I wanted to be where Murrow was, because that was the class act in news, and it was national news that attracted everyone. But as markets have evolved, if you aren't local, you don't have much of a chance.
Well, you know, and with technology, I can grab my phone and I can get any national story that I want.
Yeah.
So we, you know, it's so easy to get that information now. And that's another reason that we really push what's happening here in our community and what's happening now. I don't want it to be a history lesson. I want it to be, here's what's going on in our community at this moment. And, you know, we have our digital component as well as the broadcast component, and it's worked well. And thank you for laying the groundwork for the rest of us. I mean, you know, it's interesting what COVID has done, because we were in the planning process, and WHBF turned 70 this year, and we were going to invite some of you back. We wanted you to be on the set. We had all these big plans, and then there was this thing called COVID that hit.
Yeah.
And it's turned our world upside down, and we were trying to reinvent ourselves, and we had people working from home and trying to figure out how to cover this and how to cover it responsibly. And all those plans went by the wayside. So now maybe our 71st anniversary, things will calm down and we'll be able to do it.
No, Andy asked me if I'd come back and do something on the 70th anniversary. I said, do I have to wear makeup?
You know what? I don't, even when I'm on anymore. So, no, you don't have to when you come back.
Oh, because HGTV requires a pretty substantial makeup, doesn't it?
Oh, my goodness. It doesn't seem – I really went on a health kick and just had an unfavorable visit with the doctor. We'll leave it at that. And I realized that I needed to kind of bring my weight and just my lifestyle and everything under control, just because you get so – you'll eat whatever you have handy when you're in the news business and you're doing this. And so I lost a considerable amount of weight, but just last week we did an investigative segment, and I was part of it. And I said, is that me or is that a Festival of Trees balloon? I know the camera adds 10 pounds, but how many did they have on me? I only saw one.
First time I saw myself on television, I almost quit.
I
literally had never seen myself in profile. And when I saw my profile, I thought, oh, no, that's not going to work on TV.
I'm always afraid that children are going to start crying and running toward their parents when they see me. But they keep inviting me back.
You know, that's the odd thing about hearing your voice, you know, when it's not coming out of your own head.
Right.
And then seeing yourself as others see you. And that's always quite a jolt.
You're not
prepared for that.
It's humbling, at least in my perspective. It's humbling.
Oh, sure. Yeah. From inside, everything seems fine.
Right, yeah. Yeah. I sound and look like Brad Pitt in my mind. But, I just look like the Pitts when I'm on TV. It's a completely different view.
Let's find out what a news director does. Could you take us through I suppose there is no typical day, but when do you get up? When do you get to the station?
You know,
and then what do you do? What does a news director do?
You're right. There is no typical day, and I've learned that. I've learned to kind of to go with the flow. My contract will tell you that I'm there from 8:30 to 5:30.
Right.
But there are many days that I'll wake up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning. We're almost empty nesters, Karen and I. And so we decided it would be really smart to get a puppy. And so the puppy wakes us up very early. So the first thing I do is grab the phone and see what kind of emails and stuff that I have gotten. And so that kind of kicks me into work mode. So it's not uncommon for me to be texting members of the morning team to offer suggestions or to ask for clarification on some things. And then the last thing I do before I go to bed at night is check the phone and see what's happening, watch our newscasts and things like that. During the course of the day, it's really my job to, you know, kind of be the ringmaster. You know, we've got some very talented people there, as I've mentioned, some young adults that are just very good at what they're doing, especially for their experience level and their age. But I kind of set the tone. We have a morning meeting where we talk about the day's plan.
We
and the rest of the team. So my senior executive producer, my assignment editor, the MMJs. You know, the days, at least in this market, of having reporters go out with photographers just doesn't happen on a regular basis. We call them MMJs. They're multimedia journalists because they grab the camera, they go out, they do the interview, they record all their own video and those interviews. They do digital stuff for us as well to push things to the digital platforms. And so they're doing everything, unless it is we're going into, there's been a lot of crime in the Quad Cities, especially recently, and I'm very hesitant about sending a young MMJ out by himself or herself into one of these areas where there were just shots fired. So we try to have, a few just photojournalists, and we try to send them out with them just so there's an extra set of eyes as well. And so they go out on the, they pitch their stories. They're all required to pitch stories that will be unique for our viewers. And then they go out there, cover their stories. They come back. The producers decide in this newscast, I want this treatment. In this newscast, I want this. They have to do that. And then there's another meeting in the afternoon to talk about the evening shows. We do 7 hours of news per day, Monday through Friday, between our CBS station and our Fox station. So,
isn't that much more than stations used to do?
Much more.
I mean, the one thing that we've had people from overseas come and stay with us, the one thing they find so strange that it's funny is how much attention we pay to the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, over there they'll say it's going to rain today, and that's it. Here, if there's the slightest chance of the wind going over 50 miles an hour, you're on the air.
You are. Yeah, well, but it's amazing. We did focus groups, and that's one of the great things about Nexstar Broadcasting is they said, let's find out what your market wants. And so we had somebody come in. They found people that were and we really went out of our way to find people that were not loyalists to our station, but perhaps the other stations in the market, and see what they were looking for. And weather's king. I mean, people, that's the first thing. That's their top priority in all the focus groups that we've done. And then it became local news, and then it became breaking news. And so we've really tried to, to give the audience what they want.
That's the thing that fascinated me. When I was first asked if I could do the weather, I said, sure, let me spend 4 hours a day out at the Weather Bureau so I understand what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And I'll do it. So sure, go ahead. Then we took one of our trips to England when here at WVIK, and I turned on the weather. Lasted a minute and a half at most. And people ask, how do you do the weather? I said, well, you take a 30-second forecast and you inflate it to 4.5 minutes. What it requires is a lot of hot air. Of course, now we did not have the technology then that you have now. I came back and did a little weathering when I got out of the Senate, and I thought, oh my goodness. But what I had to work with was like child's play compared to the stuff you do now. It's just amazing.
Well, this probably won't mean that much to you because you got there before I did, but my first job was a weekend weather person in Ada, Oklahoma, and then I was reporting 3 days a week. And when I left the radio station to go to work for them, they did not inform me that I would be doing weather. I found that out the first day that I got there. So I'm living in Tornado Alley in the television market with my mom watching. And so, I made Phillips bleeps and blunders one time because we had the square box with magnets on it when I started. So when you were going to the next map, you'd flip it, the next one would pop up. I flipped it a little too hard one day, and it was actually it was one of those rare occasions where we were getting a decent amount of snow, and the snowflakes started dropping off my map one at a time. And I said, well, as you can see, the snow's falling, but it's apparently not sticking, and just kind of kept going. And then we had a tornado that went over, a funnel cloud that went over our television station and hit a mobile home park about a half a mile away. And I was on the air, and I could hear the phone ringing in the weather office. And when I got off the air, I went and answered the phone, and it really sounded like Charlie Brown's teacher. It was just wah, 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 wah. And it took me a few minutes. I thought, this is my mom. And so my mom was calling me, telling me that it was not her fault if those people did not have enough sense to go to the cellar, but I needed to get off there and I needed to go take shelter somewhere. I'm like, Mom, I'm the weather guy. I can't leave during severe weather. But that wasn't a good answer for Mom.
How much freedom does Nexstar give you to do your own thing here? I know the problem with radio stations and DJs is that now, you know, a station will, a place in Zanesville, Ohio, will own 140 stations, mm-hmm. and they'll all play the same thing, decided by somebody in the executive office at Zanesville, Ohio, not what's good for Mountain Lake, Minnesota.
You know, what they will do, I will say, with Nexstar Broadcasting, they have certain initiatives throughout the year. One is Hispanic Heritage. One is Remarkable Women. You know, so there are several that we do that are pre-packaged sort of plans for like promos and graphics and things like that. And then we have our choice of, do we want to pull Peoria and Des Moines and stories from those areas, or do we want to create our own content? So we pride ourselves in doing 4 weeks, one story per week of, you know, showing local Hispanic families, showing Remarkable Women, doing the veterans' voices, profiling local veterans. And then we put together a 30-minute special. We have our choice of 30 minutes or 60 minutes if we want. We usually go with 30. And at least the majority of that 30-minute special will be from right here in the Quad Cities. We may need to pull one, and that may be from Peoria, or it may be from Rockford, or it may be from Des Moines, but at least it's regional. So they don't tell us this is what you're going to do. They, you know, they have a regional director of local content who's come in and met with me, and he's been very supportive of my vision. I mean, they want us to be local, and they know that I've been here for 3 decades. I've raised my family here. I'm very invested in the community. I love the Quad Cities. And so he's kind of stepped back and said, go do your thing. And so that's been, you know, it's been very refreshing because I didn't know really what to expect.
Yeah, but you also, you know, it's not like it used to be. Nothing is like it used to be. But, you know, we just did television. But now you have to go on the internet. You have to keep a digital operation going. And I learned a good friend of ours, Linda Cook, I actually saw her on the air doing a story. But she's working in the digital side of it. How many people do you have doing that?
We have 6 now with Linda.
Wow.
And it started with no one when I got there. And then we hired one superstar that's a Rock Island native. He's born and raised here and worked for the Chicago Tribune for a while, wanted to come back home. So, you know, we have Linda. We have another Rock Island native, Michaela Hughes Shaw, who was the reigning Miss Iowa last year. And so now she's working for us. You're right. And one of the first things I said when they were, I came there because I was doing all these documentaries. And the former general manager met with me and said, hey, we'd really like to air your documentary on teen depression and suicide. Can we meet? So we have our meeting. Then the second meeting, he said, man, we really want to write into this, but we don't know how to do it. And we don't have a news director. And I said, well, I can do that. And then the second meeting was, you know, we're not really sure how to script the first segment of the 10 p.m. We want to continue the conversation. I said, well, let me do that. And then you guys can change what you want. Well, then eventually it just became, we don't have a news director. And so I said, okay, let's talk. But one of the first things I said when I was meeting with the regional director of local content, who oversees 23 stations around the Midwest, I said, look, you know, in WHBF's position, we can't wait for the viewer to come to us. We have to go where they are, and that's digital. We have to go online. We have to go find them. We have to show them what we're doing and then hope they'll come in. And so that's really been the philosophy for the past 3 years, and knock on wood, it's working so far.
It's got to be mind-blowing, really. There's so much going on all the time, and to try to operate on different platforms has to be a little crazy.
It is crazy. It's very challenging. It's exhilarating at the same time. But I will tell you that I never go home from work feeling fully rested. Sometimes Karen will look at me and say, you realize it's only 8:30. Uh-huh. Good night. I'm drained at that point. But it's a good feeling, too. And it's, you know, I like the fact that we don't have to wait for an appointed time to bring news to people that we feel is important. It can be instantaneous. It can be a Facebook Live. It can be a tweet. It can be a post or a website and a push notification that goes out to people who follow us on the app. And so if there's something going on in the community at that moment, we can let them know that in real time as opposed to giving it to them. Not to say that it's not going to air 3 hours later, but to give it to them now. And I think that's very important.
Yeah. Closest we came to that was when I talked him into buying an old C-band radar. We had the first radar in the community for anybody. And they had a switch in my office that I could cut into any program if the weather warranted it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I saw a hook echo near Edgington, I think. So I went on the air, and I was still cautious about saying there's a tornado there, but I said there's a hook echo in Edgington and you should take cover. And I got a call from a guy. He says, I was listening to you, and I thought, what's he talking about? I stepped out on the porch and saw my barn blow away.
Oh, look, there's one now. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But generally things were followed a set pattern. But now you have to go online immediately, or at least you choose to go online immediately.
We do, because especially in a weather event, every moment counts. And even in acts of violence, which we have certainly seen our share of in the Quad Cities recently, you know, if there's something happening, if there's shots being fired on Brady Street, people need to know about it before the 6 p.m. newscast. They need to know that it's happening now, so they know to avoid that area. And I think that's just really important. And so that's one of the things that we've really pushed. It's not to sensationalize anything. It's to just be in real time and say, we're going to give you the facts. We're going to tell you what's happening here. And then if you choose to be as silly as I am and hop in the car and drive toward the gunshots, well, then that's up to you. But, you know, that's one of the other things with us is that, you know, I constantly think about these young professionals that are there, and while we're telling everybody else to avoid that area, they're hopping in a news car with a camera and they're heading toward the action, you know, to get it on the air. And it's finding that balance of making sure they're staying safe and being smart and giving the viewer the information they need as well. And I think that's really the biggest challenge that we have right now.
You know, Mike, this program is really about writing, reading, and writing. How much writing is there involved in television these days? I notice you have to have the closed captions, which don't always jive because people get to ad-libbing.
Right.
But do you keep scripts of things? You keep records of that kind?
Yes, we do. We archive our rundowns and the scripts as well, so we can go back later. If we're seeing something similar in the community, we can go back and say, wait a minute, wasn't it just a couple of years ago this something similar happened in that area? So we document all that. We keep it there as well. With 7 hours of news per day, that's a lot of writing, because I don't want people who watch at 5 a.m. to see the same story that they at 5 p.m. when we're on the air. So we're giving them different treatments, you know, to talk in TV terms. One may be a live from the field. One may be a package, which means the reporter writes it and voices the entire thing. One may be what's called a VOSOD, and that's a voiceover sound on tape. And so it's a little bit of copy with the anchor reading it with video over it, and then we toss to a portion of an interview, and then we come back out and we tag it out. So there's a tremendous amount of writing.
This is a strange world when you have the same news people on two different stations.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's strange that people will reach out to just WHBF or just Fox 18. And I just want to say, you know, we're in the same building, right? It's the same set. It's the same people. But we do really try to give them different stories within those newscasts. You know, I mean, we're not in a huge market, and there are people that get sick, and there are people that go on vacation. And so there are some days that we have a smaller staff, and we've got to fill the time, and we do our best, and we do it responsibly. But whenever we're fully staffed and there's the possibility to do so, we really try to give them something different between those two stations whenever possible.
Do you have somebody with a camera on duty all night? I mean, one of the things you've gotten known for is were the first on the scene of this shooting at Harrison and 13. Don't know what's going on yet, but
but we've got it. Yeah, we're there, and how we're asking questions.
How did you get there, and no other stations have gotten there?
We have. So everybody has a scanner. Yeah. And we have, not to give too many of my trade secrets, but we also have MMJs who are on call. There's an on-call schedule where, and then just based on, you know, the number of hours of TV that we're doing, we pretty much have a producer in there almost 24 hours a day. Okay. So they can hear the scanner as well, and they can call whoever the on-call person is overnight.
Yeah, that's quite an operation.
It is. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, you step back and when you've been doing it for a while, it just I never lose sight of the lives lost or, you know, people losing their homes or things like that. But you don't necessarily – the danger doesn't always resonate with you until it kind of hits close to home. And just last Thursday, our youngest was he's a senior at Pleasant Valley – they were playing Davenport North at Brady Street Stadium, and two blocks away is where the shootout happened, and one of the guys got hurt. We were first on the scene, and that that young man kind of staggered up while injured and bleeding and said to my photojournalist, call the cops. And so my photojournalist called 911, and the police responded. But that was two blocks away from where my son and other boys that he's grown up with and other young men and their families were all gathered for, you know, what many would say the All-American activity, you know, and watching that. And then I had heard from somebody else, and I don't have this confirmed, but, you know, I wasn't reporting it as a journalist. Somebody said that the guy that one of the guys that was doing the shooting had tried to gain entrance into the stadium during the football game, police knew that him from his history and turned him away. I don't have that confirmed with police, and to be honest with you, at that point, I'm not sure I want to, because that's just an extra yuck factor for any of the parents who had kids there. But
yeah,
you know,
I should mention that happened a couple of weeks ago, because you know, we're recording this in advance.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, this, we're historical. We're not up to date.
That's okay. That's okay.
But it is a very active life when you cover the news.
Yes.
When I first arrived at WHBF, they had radio, and the news department had 12 people in it for radio.
Oh, wow.
And they were WHBF was the news center of the entire area. It really was.
Wow.
And things change over time. Radio has changed in dramatic ways. Television has changed. And keeping up with those changes is really tough.
You have to stay ahead of the curve, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I must say, Mike, you've had a very interesting career and bopping all over the place, it seems to me, but you seem to have wound up at a spot where you're comfortable. And I hope you enjoy it as much as I did my time there.
Thank you so much. It's just an honor to be in the room with both of you, and I appreciate having the opportunity to share memories from different times at WHBF with you. And I am. It's a great place to be, and, you know, it's a great way to wrap up my career. And, again, I have a very strong team, and, you know, I'm invested in them, and they're invested in the product, and things are good.
The churn is constant, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. There's not a restful day, that's for sure, but that's okay.
Okay, well, we've been talking to Mike Mickel, who's the news director at Channel 4, WHBF-TV, and they also handle the news for the Fox station in the area, a sign of how times have changed in television. Thanks for spending time with us, Mike.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And with that, we'll summon the musicians in here and we'll make our way out. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll be back next week for another session of Scribble, and hope that you will too. We'll see you then.